Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the July 11th, 2022 commission meeting, virtual meeting. So let me do some homework here. So we'll call the meeting to order. The first item is comments from the public. T, are you going to shepherd this?
Yes, I will. Well, if anyone would like to make a public comment at this time, please raise your hand or state your name. I'm not seeing anyone.
Okay, thank you. Okay, first item we have after public comments is the agenda revisions. Sean, do we have any agenda revisions?
None today, Will.
Good, thank you. Next item is approval of consent agenda. We have five items on the consent agenda. These were sent out beforehand for review.
I only see four, Will.
Oh, I'm sorry. I miscounted. There's five lines and four items. Thank you.
I did have a question about the delinquent accounts of $18,500 or so, including a 30% collection fee. I'm assuming that means that these are accounts that we cannot get payment for and we turn them over to a collection agency, and the 30% is we expect to only get 30% back of the $18,000. Is that correct?
No. So how that works, you're correct in that the accounts are turned over to a collection agency. And when it says that the $18,000 includes a 30%, that's the fee that the collection agency charges for their services. So if we collect back the full $18,000, it would include us being paid in full and also the collection agency being paid in full. So anything that we recover, the collection agency gets 30% of it.
Oh, I see. So we get the $18,000, but then we have to pay 30% of that to the collection agency?
Right, but that $18,000 includes their fees, so we would be whole.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, other questions, comments?
No, I don't have any.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I second that.
It moved and seconded to, for approval of the consent agenda for July the 11th, 2022. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, moving on to business items. Our first item is Resolution 2245-22, appointing the district's public records officer. Sean?
Yeah, so we recently had a vacancy in our records department, and that employee held the title of records officer with the district. So that vacancy needs to be filled by a qualified individual. And the resolution before you appoints Nicole Hartman, our communications and government relations manager, to fulfill the duties of records officer for the district. As you know, Nicole has recently assumed supervisory responsibility for the records department. And this is obviously a logical step for a successor of these duties. So I recommend the board adopt resolution 2245-22, appointing Nicole Hartman as the district's public records officer effective today, July 11th, 2022.
Do we have a motion or questions, comments?
I guess I have a question, Sean. In terms of workload, it almost sounds like you're combining Nicole's previous job plus this records retention job. Is that workable? I mean, you assume it is, but I mean, is it because she's in a supervisor position, she's got people underneath her working both those things, or how's that shake out from a workload standpoint for her?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the workload, one of the first things we did upon the vacancy was Nicole went back to the department and kind of did an assessment of the job duties and the workload. So we're actually in the process right now of we're going to post a position and shift some duties back there. One of the employees wants to actually go part-time, so we're going to accommodate that and then post a full-time position to backfill that. And so with our assessment and Nicole talking to the employees. We have a adequate staffing with her assuming these duties to move forward.
Okay. I don't have any more questions.
I move that we pass or accept Resolution 2245-22, appointing the district's public records officer.
I'll second the motion.
We moved and seconded for approval of Resolution 2245-22, appointing Nicole Hartman as the district's public record officer effective July 11th, 2022. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. Next item is a presentation of the draft 2023 strategic plan. It says staff. Is this Sean, John, or all of the above?
It's going to be all of the above, but I'll kick it off here. Let me share my screen. Can everybody see the large slide that says 2023 strategic plan?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So a little preamble here. In early June, the management team met for 2 days to complete a deep dive overhaul of our strategic plan. And I've invited those 12 members here today to present the revisions that were made and also to get your feedback. I believe most of you know it's been about 5 years since we did a full deep dive revision. Typically every year we do updates, but this was a full deep dive where we made massive revisions to the strategic plan. The meeting was great. It was very engaging and very productive. Every manager contributed to the new version that's before you. It was, you know, a group effort with a lot of healthy dialogue, and I know that all of us are proud to present the proposal today. So in your board packet are two versions. One is the red line version showing the strike through changes that were either modified or deleted. And then the other is the clean version with the yellow highlights showing the new content. So the yellow highlight version, which is on the screen here, is what we're going to present today. If at any time during our presentation you have questions, please don't hesitate to ask and interject your thoughts and ideas. That's what this is for. We're hoping that it will be interactive. We've also provided this highlighted version to all of the district employees and asked for their thoughts and feedback. And once we get your feedback today, we do plan to post this to the public. And then after we post to the public for about 2 weeks, we're going to come back and hopefully do a work session to engage the public and local governance for their feedback. So once we receive all comments from all the meetings, we'll bring a final version back to the board for approval at a later meeting. So I'm hoping that maybe sometime in August we'll have all that completed and bring back to you for approval. One thing we wanted to make evident in our strategic plan was showing that we took the suggestions that we received from our employee survey. It's important to myself, and I know the management team as a whole, that we incorporated actionable items from the employees. And as we go through this today, you can see some of those ideas that have come through in the updates. So with that, I'll start off at the beginning of the strategic plan. And then as we get to each strategic initiative, I'll hand it over to each direct report lead to go over the changes. And again, this was a group effort. And so all the managers who are listening on here, please jump in and provide any comments that you have as we go through this. So the first slide here is all yellow. It's all changes. We decided to create a table of contents in order to make the strategic plan more user-friendly. It's also on this page that you can easily, you see my cursor over here, you can easily identify at a quick glance and see all the different strategic objectives that are incorporated into the plan. So that's a new slide that we've incorporated this year. This slide here, we didn't really update much, except we did change the quote. I know we have, I might be biased here, but I know that we have some of the most talented and dedicated employees in all of the utility industry who work relentlessly on serving our customers. So the quote here seemed appropriate, that leadership is having a compelling vision, a comprehensive plan, relentless implementation, and talented people working together. About column PUD, we didn't change anything here except we'll update some of the numbers here about accounts and our water connections, but we'll make those changes. The core values, we changed. We used to have a picture on this slide of just the poster that we have displayed at all of our different offices. It didn't look quite right having the picture in there of a poster, so we created a new page here that has a new look and version. And we also updated pictures throughout the strategic plan to more recent ones from what we used to have. Some of the old pictures had retirees that no longer work here, and so we wanted to incorporate some of the new hires and bring their pictures into the plan. So on the achievements, we also added in our most recent award that you can see here. We felt it was very important to add some of the awards that are extremely difficult to obtain. For example, achieving the RP3 designation from APPA is very prestigious. As you all know, less than 15% of utilities achieve RP3, and only a fraction of that 15% actually receive the diamond level, which is what we obtained. Same with the smart energy provider. Only 97 utilities in the country achieved this designation, and we were one of them. And then obviously, our award from GFOA and Clean Audits is also a great indication that we're not only doing great things at the PUD, but we're doing those great things correctly. Okay, somebody needs to mute. No updates on our strategy pyramid or on the objectives and the plan process. But we did add this page here. So definitions and acronyms was a suggestion by Nicole, and it was a really good one that was frankly quite overdue. As you all know, our industry is full of many acronyms that most people simply don't know what they stand for. In fact, I know we're all in the industry on this in this meeting, but we have to look up things from time to time too. So it was a great idea to incorporate a lot of these acronyms in here so that customers can read the plan and go back to this page and see what that acronym actually stands for.
So an observation, possibly a suggestion here, is we talk about public power. And in fact, in one of your down in your strategic plan further, you say that it's a weakness that people don't understand the benefits of public power. I'm not sure people understand what public power really means. Because I always have to explain it to people every time, you know, I get into this conversation. And maybe we ought to have a definition of what public power is and how that relates to this PUD.
Okay. That's a good suggestion, Jim. I'm going to write that down just a second.
Yeah, a lot of that's driven by statutes like the Northwest Public Power Act and numerous others. We might have a might include those in your acronyms and maybe a little explanation that we're driven by statute for most of our authority and activity.
Yeah, we could reference RCW 54. That's a good idea. I like that suggestion. Okay. So with that, this is my last slide here before we kick it off into each individual strategic objective. Ruth is first up on the docket here. Just so you guys know, she's feeling a little bit under the weather, but she was dedicated enough and said she wanted to do this and present. So I'm going to do both of her objectives back to back. So be financially responsible is normally the last one, but I'm going to do that one right after strategic objective, provide stable rates so that Ruth can get off the call and rest up. So with that, Ruth, I will hand it over to you to go over the highlights here. And again, anybody jump in if they feel necessary.
Thanks, Sean. I'm not going to turn my video on because I'm not feeling very presentable. Okay, provide stable rates. We previously defined this as minimal budget fluctuations to support rate stability for district customers. And in light of our current and ongoing economic uncertainty, we redefined that as levelized rate increases responsive to inflation, excuse me, to provide rate stability for district customers. Our objective has been and will continue to be rate stability for our customers, and the district will continue its strategy of small incremental rate adjustments, which has a powerful compounding effect for revenue recovery and is better tolerated than large, infrequent rate adjustments and helps us to maintain the financial health of the district.
Ruth, if you get to feeling too bad, we'll understand, so don't be too diligent.
I appreciate that, Will. Thank you.
I'm glad I updated my virus protection.
Okay, our picture of excellence is to have rate adjustments no greater than 2% over the previous five-year average rate change. In addition, replacement capital costs are within 15% of depreciation. Keeping up with the deterioration of our infrastructure will keep us from having large, sudden replacement capital needs, which could have a large rate impact.
I have a comment.
Sure.
Previous years, including last year, the rate adjustment was 1% over the last 5 years. Now we have 2%, and I'm not really in favor of that at all, nor do we say anywhere here anymore, in previous cases we did, where we strive to look for opportunities or, you know, ways to reduce rates. And I've said before, in the same context of this particular point, is if we have a goal or a picture of excellence, it's a 2% increase over averages, that sort of becomes the norm. And then that means we're not really looking for anything that might get us below that, less than 2%, or actually reduce rates somehow or cut back on the percentage. Because I think we've been running, 3.5% rate increases, and we throw in 2 on top of that, you know, a few more years of this, and, you know, we're already – I get a lot of complaints about the rates. And I know everybody says we have the cheapest rates, but when you look at their overall power bill, since they're 100% electrical, it is a lot of money. And so I'd like some discussion on that.
Sure. And we did have a lot of back and forth about that change from 1% to 2%. And if you look at the KPI, green is within 0 to 1%. So anything that's 2 or greater is, you know, a lesser is considered lesser.
Yes, I'd like to, this is John, I'd like to step in on this as well. That 2% or the 1% is plus or minus, and it could go both ways. Like our current most recent rate increase and the rate increase approved for next year were each 2.25%. And they were at the bottom end of that range. They were actually lower than the previous several years. So we don't want anyone to have the impression that we're looking to get a 2% or even necessarily 1% above the five-year average. We're going to actually target a lower rate increase consistent with the district missions to provide affordable, cost-effective power. And we're going to do everything within our ability to come in lower than CPI, cost of living, like increases, like we have for the last 2 years, certainly. So
we should say that, John. In summary.
Yeah, in summary. But another reason is the power industry over the last 12 months has seen double-digit increases in the cost of power. We have to face that we are entering into an inflationary period that is very significant. Now, if our average rate over the last 5 years come out to be about 3%, or Sean, did you do that 2.?
I did. It's from 19 to 23, our average rate would be 2.8%. So plus or minus 2% would be 0.8 to 4.8.
Correct. So even, worst case, we're going to try to stay green within 1%, which is satisfactory. Red or yellow is not very satisfactory. It's a warning. But we would hope to target that rate increase. But we have to realize the industry as a whole is looking at double-digit energy increases this last year as well as next year, while we're keeping our rates at 2.25% for both of those years. As a matter of fact, we are one of the few utilities that over last year and this coming year is going to be low single-digit increases. So, like I say, I mean, we're going to try to keep it 2.8%, but there's a lot of upward pressure on rates due to inflation, CPI mm-hmm. issues, cost of materials. I mean, we're going to take close to a $2 million increase in transformer cost as time goes on, if they do not come back down. And we have other material costs that are probably double digit since last year as well. So if we say we're going to come in within 1% of 2.8% and look at a 3.8%, yeah, we're going to try, but is that really realistic? I mean, you know, we're going to try, but it is, there's a certain amount of cutting or cutbacks when you're faced with such escalation that it becomes unmanageable. But we do think we can try to get within 1% of that 2.8 number. It's not going to be 4%. It's not going to be 5 or 6%. It's going to be far less than similar utilities over the next couple of 3 years is my expectation.
Well, I guess, you know, my comment here is that if you're a customer, part of your inflation is what you pay for electricity. So we are part of the inflation equation. So if we keep raising rates, we're just adding to inflation. The other thing, I guess, is that we got to be careful how we compare. If you're an electricity user here and you're 100% electrical, and you're comparing rate increases with a utility that basically provides only electricity for lights and televisions and refrigerators and stuff, their rate increases would go up, but their overall power bills aren't. Is it going to go up as much? And so that's I would be careful with, you know, the comparisons. And I know you guys have tried in the past to show apples-to-apples comparisons, but I think we ought at least, we had it at 1% before. Now we're 2%, and we don't say anything about trying to really look for strategically. We ought to be looking for ways that we can somehow address and lower, and somehow lower rate increases, reduce rate increases, or lower rates at all altogether. That's not easy, of course, but that's what you do in a strategic plan. Is you look at the things that really are important to your customers in this case, and what are we going to do about it?
Well, what we could do, we've gone through our 10-year capital plan, which is to maintain system reliability, so we could start cutting projects potentially. But the concern there would be that we don't maintain reliability.
Well, that's right, and I'm not suggesting that that's exactly what we do. I mean, you're always going to be looking at that stuff. But I think, for instance, you know, what we pay Bonneville Power is obviously the big gorilla in the room here. And we ought to be working with other PUDs and associations and groups like WAPAG and so forth to understand what it is that's driving BPA rate increases in the future, which they're going to be big rate increases in the future.
Jim, as you know, we just spent months working with Public Power Council, WAPAG, all the alphabet soup of public power, presented a position paper to Bonneville of what we want to see in the upcoming contracts. So I think what you're saying we ought to do, we're doing. So if you think there's an alternate to Bonneville Power, then I'd like to hear about it. But
I think you should always look at options.
Well, Jim, we are looking at options. We know that the market is 4 to 5 times higher than Bonneville. And if we were to diversify away from Bonneville, our rates would be a heck of a lot higher. But I understand to some extent what you're saying, which is that our goal should be to try to keep rates as low as possible. And I think that if anything on this strategic objective, you know, if we were to articulate that single point, that, you know, our overall goal is always to keep rates as low as possible, but we have to be cognizant of what's going on in the marketplace and in the world. And inflation now is a reality. And our goal, once again, is to keep rates as low as possible. So I'm not sure, you know, where you're trying to go with this, other than maybe just to articulate what we are already doing.
Well, this is John. One thing I can say, each and every rate increase goes before the board, and the board holds the staff feet to the fire on keeping rates low. So we're not trying to set a rate at this time.
Yeah, I know, John, but by the time you bring it to the board, it's too late for us to do anything about it. I'm thinking strategically here, you know, in the next, over the next 10 years, 15 years, what are we doing today to position ourselves in the future to be in a better position to have, you know, just to look at what the market is doing? You say it's four or five times the BPA rate. Well, I'm not sure about that. Maybe in certain rare moments and so forth. But if we don't put in place the ideas strategically that, that over the next some number of years, we're going to be refining our processes by which we seek power at the lowest reasonable cost. But if we just are accepting that whatever BPA is going to do or whatever it works out with the 2028 contract process, I think we're not doing due diligence.
But Tim, I guess I would take exception to your statement that by the time it comes to the board, it's too late. I've never approached board decisions like that. It's never too late. So anyway, we have the final say on those things. Plus, we develop those rates in our budget in a public process, public workshops, and in a final public meeting and take public comments. So I think that's about the best you can do. So
I know, John, Will, but it's difficult to argue with staff when they're showing you the actual cost now. And it's public. And we can ask questions. We can always say no, but there's not a good alternative at that point in time. I'm just trying to think forward, look into the future, and try to develop some sort of dialogue and mechanisms among the staff and other PUDs and so forth about, you know, how it is we can, deal with the future.
Well, the last couple of rate increases, Jim, we brought to the commissioners, we reviewed the BPA rate case. And so we come to the board with a 2-year plan. Going beyond that for rate increases would be difficult, but if you'd like us to bring forward maybe a longer term rate increase proposal, we could look at that.
Long term rate increase proposal.
Long term rate proposal.
Setting the stage for, I guess I'm not communicating very well here, but I think it's wise for us to think strategically and act strategically in not only with ourselves but other organizations and PUDs we work with and agencies to look at what we can do to reduce costs. I mean, that's certainly what BPA is slowly but surely becoming around to agree to, is that cost management is something that needs overhauls.
Yeah, Jim, you seem to be implying that there's something cheaper, quicker, better than Bonneville. We don't know what the upcoming contracts are going to look like. We've got some little snippets, but I think it's a little early to make that determination.
Okay, I give up.
Well, and I will say, as we go through this plan, power procurement is a big part of our cost, but so is internal cost. And you'll see throughout this plan that we've made many changes in the past and previous strategic plans, as well as going forward in this one, ways to increase productivity, which is the way to control our internal cost, finding better ways to do things, do more with fewer staff, and our strategic plan touches on that. We also monitor power procurement costs and opportunities as they arise. It's not like we're ignoring them. We take a pretty good look at it and have presented to the board, about once every year, power supply options and updates and the state of the industry. And we do that in our meetings as well. So, we do make those efforts and we do compare alternatives on a regular basis.
And we ought to say something about that here.
So include something about reviewing costs in general, or?
Okay, so basically what we could do, I mean, I don't think that fits in the picture of excellence, but you could make a case for an additional strategic initiative to look at opportunities, basically to do what we do regularly as a strategic initiative so that the public is aware that is what we normally do. So give us some time to think about another strategic initiative to add that may encapsulate your thought, Jim.
That would be helpful.
And that may actually go on the power supply end. We'll have to take a look at that. But.
Okay, Ruthie.
In the last plan, we had provide stable rates while always seeking reduced costs across all fronts, whether it's internal or external. But we don't have that here.
Where are you looking at, Jim? Sorry.
It was in the 2022 strategic plan where we had the customer internal enablers and financial, the four big areas. Under customer, we had provide stable rates while always seeking reduced costs. Well, okay. So, I guess I've said all I can say. So if the staff's got some ideas of how to include some priority or strategic objective that the board can look at, that'd be great.
Hey, Jim, this is John. That may be on another objective. I'm not saying where we took anything out on here with the redraft of the picture of excellence other than the 1% became 2% adjustment.
I didn't see it either, John. I was just thumbing through it looking for it.
I don't know if you can see I'm holding the page up. Of course, I can't get my screen to orient.
Okay.
And Jim, which objective is that you're looking at?
Customers. It looks like you took that whole set of bullets out completely.
Yeah, it's a change. I know where he's talking about, Ruth.
Okay.
Yeah,
but it's not these slides.
It's on red lines. It's on page 8.
Yeah, okay. of the red line. I found it, Ruth.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I don't know.
I was going to say, no, that's okay. This is Jamie. I was going to say we did add some customer points under enhanced customer partnership, which you might see, Mr. Waddell, as we get to that strategic objective.
Okay.
Hey, we need to move on. We've got quite a few pages to go. So go ahead, Ruth.
Okay. Let's see. Where was I? We updated our picture of excellence, and then we identified two new gaps to the picture of excellence. F addresses our staffing issues. G addresses our current and potential future economic issues. We also updated 5 and 8 of our strategic initiatives, and then we added number 10. And I don't know if, John, you could speak to number 10.
Yeah, so active participation in BPA provider of choice and contract negotiations. we thought that would be appropriate since that is what we're doing on an ongoing basis as a utility, both board and staff.
Now, that's going to, a lot of people seem to have the impression that we're going to sit across the table as Clallam PUD and negotiate a unique contract. And this, you could read this statement like that. I don't know how you'd change that, but it's the public power community that does that negotiation, and we input that process. So.
Well, even so, Will, that's not even a negotiation. Geez, they just throw down the comments and BPA throws out their paper. But there are things within the context of either the, not only the contract process itself, but outside the process where we have just in the past, PUDs and associations have dealt directly with the Corps of Engineers or Bureau of Reclamation, along with BPA, in looking at cost issues. And we know that BPA has deferred a lot of capital expenditures for the last 5 years in order to keep the rate case low as we move into these contracts. Well, those chickens are all going to come home to roost here in a few years. And if we're not positioned and prepared to hammer into those agencies and understand what are the real costs going to be here in the future, then I don't know. Now, whether you call that, is it contract negotiations? Yeah, I don't know. That's just the term of the that everybody uses, but you're right, it's not really a negotiation.
Well, you have to influence. Bonneville is part of the Department of Energy. The administrator reports to the Undersecretary of Energy. So you have to use the 3 or 4 million customers of public power to influence the process, plus the congressional delegation to influence that process. And that's worked in the past.
We could change it to active participation in BPA provider of choice process instead of contract negotiation.
Yeah, I think that's probably wiser.
Whoops. Sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to skip ahead there.
No, it's fine. Okay, so the KPIs, we modified the electric budget to actual measure. John had suggested we weather adjust the revenues and purchase power because, well, we don't have control over the weather. We can budget on normal weather, but it would make it more of an apples-to-apples comparison if we took this approach. We also modified the electric rate increase KPI to reflect that 2% versus the one that we had there before. But again, it's 0 to 1%. A 0 to 1% change over the last five-year average that is a green result. Okay. Be financially responsible. Again, we updated the language to better define our objective. It previously read manage costs and utilize assets in an efficient and effective way to ensure financial health and stability of the district. And now we have to ensure financial stewardship by delivering outcomes that demonstrate transparent, effective, and responsible management of the district's finances. Our previous picture of excellence was maintain at least an AA3 rating with Moody's Investor Service and achieve the objectives of the strategic plan, manage expenditures within budgeted levels, and meet revenue requirements. So again, we updated the language to better capture the district's goals. For the big gaps, we have a number of changes. I won't read through all of them, but we, in light of the economy and related issues, we just identified areas we can improve with regards to cash forecasting and budget management. We also noted that we need to take advantage of all current and future federal funding opportunities.
Ruth, could you explain F, lack of cash forecasting model?
Well, we have a model it shouldn't say lack. I should just say improve our cash forecasting model. We want to develop a more robust model that incorporates a little more granular data.
So you're talking about cash on hand, or I don't quite understand.
No, just basically on a month-to-month basis, how much cash do we expect to be left with? So, I mean, you could look at it in terms of days cash on hand as well, but we want to see, you know, where we're going to be at year end, and just add some more variables to the model that we have now.
Okay. Well, the cash on hand helped. I couldn't quite understand what you were talking about, cash in the tiller or.
No, so basically, let me add. So basically, we have large projects going on throughout the year, and we have contracts that will be put out according to our budget authority in quotes. And we now have systems that are more, I guess you would call it, real time and projected outlays that can be fed into our modeling to get us a more current number with respect to the actual date and improve projections throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That helps.
Yes. Thanks, John.
I got a question, or I'd like some more commentary on point G, staff lack of understanding of budget. Given all the awards we got, that's hard to fathom. What do you really mean by that?
Well, Jim, we've had a lot of turnover at the supervisory level, fairly inexperienced. They're very good at what they do, but the budget has been previously driven at higher levels. And with the new persons, we need to convey some of the senior knowledge to the supervisors who are taking the first crack at the budget, and it's a new experience for the majority of our employees doing it this year. So they have stuff to learn, some training and experience they need to get under the belt to do this effectively.
Okay. So it's really like new people, new hires, new staff, lack of understanding.
Yeah, and we also want to get people, like say, historically, the budget had been driven by a small handful of more senior staff, and we're hoping to leverage the knowledge of a wider body of staff who review reports and give updates on projects regularly and what the cost trends are as we go through. I think Sean has introduced, Ruth has even done some more on this to actually make budgetary information available as quickly as possible to supervisors and project managers so that they'll get a handle if one or more of their projects appears to be going off rails with respect to cost, or if through errant charges might have hit a particular project in error, and catch those issues as they happen.
Okay, that sounds great, John and Ruth, and I guess the wording here just threw me off a little bit, because I think what you're trying to do is get to more grounding in your budget process with all the staff, and that's a great idea. Maybe it ought to be, but that requires new, it requires training and, so forth.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion, Jim, to reword that.
Yeah, I think so, too. Okay, on to the initiatives. New ones for 2023 are to educate managers on the budget functions, enhance our budget reporting, develop a more meaningful cash forecasting model, and to continue our pursuit of any and all federal funding when available. For the KPIs, we had previously had the cash reserves KPI, but we also had a cash balance KPI. And since that's already captured more or less in our budget KPI in the previous initiative, we eliminated that one and instead incorporated elements from our financial policy. So the first one we have is our debt coverage ratio, which is a measurement of our debt affordability. The general guideline is to generate sufficient cash flow from operations each fiscal year to cover our debt payments 1.25 times. And utilities with insufficient debt coverage can technically be in default and considered higher risk, and that can affect future interest rates. Our target for our policy is 2 times. Next, we added the debt to asset ratio. This is a leverage ratio, and it measures how much of the district's assets would be used if our debt was paid in full. Our target is 40% or less. And I just wanted to relay this quote before I talk about the cash reserves. Per American Public Power Association, policies that define a minimum cash reserve make for healthier utilities when established and followed. A cash reserve policy does not reference a specific dollar amount, but follows a defendable methodology to give future decision makers guidance and accountability. Our cash reserves are defined in terms of days cash on hand, and it's the amount of days we can pay our operating costs. And we've defined our minimum reserves as 120 days and our target as 180 days.
Now, that's not just operate, that's O&M, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Ruth, thank you. I know that you were feeling under the weather, so thank you for agreeing to come on and present your 2 slides. I appreciate it.
Yeah, get better, Ruth.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any other questions or suggestions on Ruth's 2 slides here?
None for me.
All right. So next one is ensure reliable supply, which is John and Tom. Tom is actually out today. I think John said he was going to take the majority of this year. So, John?
Okay, let me find it. Ensure reliable supply. The first change is we inserted high quality where previously we placed consistent. We want to do a little bit better than consistent, provide dependable and high quality products and services to our customer. We completely redrafted the picture of excellence with, I believe, our substantial improvements. Customers provided with on-demand and continuous electric, water, and communication service. Outages are kept to a minimum. Emergency events incorporated into lessons learned and follow-up. Utilize proven and secure technology provided for electric and water system. Cybersecurity is very important, and we do not want to take any losses associated with that. SCADA, which we integrated into our substations this year. We still have one more substation for SCADA. Thereafter, all substations will be SCADA. We want to leverage GIS and AMI, drinking water regulations are met at the lower cost, and successfully adapt to consequences of climate change. Climate change is being built into many forecasts of the associations and our partners, and we are doing the same. It impacts both water and electric. For the big gaps, some of these changes was due to reordering, but we do want to complete our AMI project, finalize broadband connectivity between Port Angeles and Saffron on the Forks, as well as GIS and SCADA. We see a gap in excessive outage duration and frequency. We need improvements there. We have, some areas are wilderness, but we're doing what we can and being innovative to find ways to reduce outages through undergrounding, exposed overhead, as well as better operations in general, better diagnostics of when we have outages. We want to optimize system operations through technological innovation, and we have been doing that for better than 10 years, but there's always improvements and new developments, and we want to take advantage of that. Of course, broadband, that's a hot topic in our county, and without grants, it's not really financially viable without either a subsidy or a substantial grant funding, and we're seeking those grants. As a matter of fact, we're applying for a middle mile grant to the tune of $11 to $13 million to get our broadband link between Port Angeles and Forks, and we're working with ISPs to take that on to the end-use customer for any excess capacity. The board over the last year, early this year or late last year, has requested that we keep very close tabs and tracking on BPA outages and making assessments of those outages because they do affect our customers, and we thought we would include that into our strategic gaps to fill. We do have access to the BPA outage database now. And I think we may be – they actually placed a link on their website on their portal to actually give customers access. It's very useful, and that's what we utilize to pull a lot of the BPA information that we presented earlier this year. And, of course, infrastructure enhancements required to adapt to climate change. We're seeing impacts and negative consequences, we believe, on the water side. And, of course, on the power side, we're going to have to keep an eye on things as well. So any questions on identified big gaps to the picture of excellence or the picture of excellence?
And you might add the BPA transmission outages. Those will mainly occur on the West End, I believe.
Well, yeah, generally so, but, you know, we did in 2018 and even last year, we were subject to an East BPA transmission outage. So we want, you know, we're going to keep tabs both on wherever it is and whenever it's affecting PUD customers.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, on the strategic initiatives, not a whole lot of changes to the initiatives, but for electric, we have we reworded this so it was more concise and clear. Conduct comprehensive planning study every 3 years with a 10-year planning horizon with annual reviews and effective implementation of associated projects. You know, of course, we have a planning study that is done, conducted in-house by staff under my oversight that basically takes a long view of the system requirements, and we plan our substation projects, major transmission projects, and even distribution projects out for 10 years. And we make an effort to somewhat levelize those within our capability so we do not see major highs and lows. We try to levelize our capital such that it does not produce substantial rate fluctuation. We have a target. We try to stay within an envelope of that target, barring unforeseen or emergencies, and that planning study is a very useful reference for us and others.
Hey, John, you might add long-range planning. Those words seem to mean a lot to some people. So,
yeah, 10-year, okay, with 10-year long hey, Sean, can you make a note to place long-term planning in there?
Yeah, I wrote it down, John.
Okay. Okay, and down at number 10, conduct annual ERRP assessments, lessons learned, and conduct ERRP exercises and drills. So basically, this is a both an AGIS inspection and RP3 best practice. We have done this in the past, but we're going to highlight it and ensure this is done annually and that we get comprehensive lessons learned. I believe Sean has scheduled an exercise here for later this month for management. Okay, in telecommunications, we made some additions. Sean Delplain is a direct report lead for telecom. We are going to make an effort to develop a formalized 5-year capital plan where we have equipment and systems with, you know, items that, you know, may only have 5 to 10-year life in them. And we're going to get a close handle on that to hopefully levelize those expenses. And we're also going to need to comply with federal and state mandates for broadband network components. built into grants, which we've received in the past, BTOP and otherwise, we incur long-term obligations, which we have to evaluate and report and perform specific O&M tasks as a condition of the grant. Even grants that we received, you know, close to 15, 20 years ago, we still need to keep tabs as a condition of the grant. And the same thing actually applies to some FEMA grants where we're obligated to do certain things if we're given a grant due to storm damage. Same thing applies for telecommunications. And also, one of the things we really want to focus on is encourage support and work with local.
Oh, I'm looking for my bucket.
Okay, we're encourage support and work with local internet service providers to make their businesses successful and bring fiber to the end user. We have a close working relationship with more than a half a dozen ISPs, and we have ISPs working with us on our middle mile broadband grant that we're working on between Port Angeles and Forks. On the water side, we have one water system that we do not have SCADA, which is for those who are unfamiliar with it, and that's why we put the index at the beginning. This is supervisory control and automated data acquisition and controls. You know, we can actually operate valves and stuff like that through SCADA remotely. But for panoramic heights water system, which is a fairly small water system in the Port Angeles areas, we do not have SCADA currently. We want to get that integrated so it would be like our other water systems. For water, we plan to conduct feasibility studies for climate change resiliency. We suffered damage from slides and flooding out in CQ and Clallam Bay, and received federal funding for some of the damages, and hopefully for eventually mitigation. And this will be a part of that. We also want to procure a water truck for drought mitigation. As of today, in the last several years, the water department's relied on the electric department water truck that's part of our directional drilling equipment. And we've loaned the water department that vehicle most years during the dry season so that they can make water runs under emergency conditions. But when that happens, it pretty much shuts down our directional drilling operations for underground cable replacements. And with the need, the water department believes that the best approach is to get a vehicle that's special purpose for that, so that you don't have to reconfigure a truck to serve a different function. It has to go to the auto shop, and they spend some time configuring it for different purposes. So this is overall a better productivity, both for water and electric. Any questions?
I'll just add to that, John, that the one that the water department borrows from the electric department is a very small tank, and it requires basically it's a full-time job during drought conditions where an employee is driving back and forth between the water systems to make sure that it doesn't run dry. So the larger truck that they're looking at, I believe Tom said it was about four times the capacity of the existing one. So I know that's a high priority for them.
Sean, I believe you're correct. That's a good point. It's at least three times the capacity, and it may be four.
All right. So, on reliable supply, John.
Okay, reliable supply. We have made some minor changes here. Our SAIDI, I believe, was 185 to 250. And there was a disconnect between our planning study objectives and the strategic plan. And I'm not sure how that happened, but we've modified the strategic plan to make it consistent with our planning study, hence the change to 180. So that's the only change for the electric rolling annual average. And then for electric, we're also, I believe we're tightening the range for our satisfactory green. It used to be 90%. Sean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't have the one.
That's correct. Yeah, 90%.
So we're setting a little bit higher hurdle for that, 95 to 100% for RP3 score. Yellow is the bare minimum to get RP3 designation, and red, if you fail to get RP3 designation, it means your score was less than 80%. Water outages due to aging infrastructure, I believe the change there, let me find the...
Yeah, it used to say major emergency events, but you change it to aging infrastructure.
Yeah, so, and this is primarily old water mains and water main breaks. Okay, water operating permits. This is a new one. Green status, blue status, and yellow status. So basically, yellow is the worst. Blue status is a warning. This is a terminology, I believe, used by the water industry for water operating permit status. And then telecom availability, this is somewhat similar to what we had before. Our telecommunication is generally high reliability, but if you do lose the major fiber and it's down for 3 days, you're down to 99% availability. And that will be possible if we get the middle mile, where you could have a major storm that did take fiber out for perhaps a day, because we see that in some of the other ISPs. Okay, last change, as I mentioned, Sean Del Plain, broadband supervisor, is the direct report lead. He's the one.
Hey, John, before we leave this, I want to commend you for and the staff for tightening the metrics. You know, the old saying of continuous performance improvement, no metrics, no movement. And so by tightening these metrics, that drives better performance. So that's good.
Yeah, and on this, we've gotten better. Our first RP3 application, we got about 90%. Our second application, we got 97%. And our last one, we got 100%. But I will advise, the RP3 gets more and more challenging as you go on, because they've added many, many new requirements to get the highest level award. It will be certainly a challenge this year to do so. Many, many new requirements and criteria that we have to fulfill, including wildfire mitigation, specific O&M requirements, specific budget requirements. Cybersecurity is a big issue now, and we're getting our information and procedures and practices up to speed to get as high a score as possible. Okay, practice environmental responsibility. Let me get my screens right. And let me pull up my red line so I have access to that as well. I'm sorry, I'm moving things around on my screen. Okay, so the definition, added to the definition is a section meeting regulatory requirements while recognizing our compliance actions have short and long-term impacts on the environment as well as financial burdens to our customers. And for the picture of excellence, it is to meet or exceed. And previously that was just meet, but we're now looking to meet or exceed all environmental regulations in a financially responsible manner by implementing cost-effective, proven technologies and initiatives to support conservation and environmental responsibility. So we're not quite as hardcore on just meeting the requirements. That's been that change. There's been a lot of changes into the big gaps that we've identified. We need to protect existing water rights and procure or mitigate sufficient new water rights to satisfy DOE and DOH mandates. As you're well aware, we're working closely with the Department of Ecology, the county, as well as municipalities and tribes to attempt to obtain mitigation for Carlsberg area in order to serve more customers in a wider area. We also want to ensure adequate first responder and backup training for all spills and other environmental emergencies. We've had some changeover, and we had restrictions due to COVID that limited in-person training, but that is behind us now, and we are conducting regular first responder and backup training for all spills. Our people who respond in the middle of the night for a transformer that's fallen down, they have the knowledge and capability to mitigate spills and ensure proper reporting and ensure we get the right people out to do cleanups as needed. We want to mention we have an uncertain path to resource adequate carbon-free power supply. While we're currently carbon neutral, we meet the 2030 requirement for CETA. Over the long term, all carbon sources in RECs will not be available 2045 and thereafter. We have to plan for that today to meet those high hurdles. Identify long-term disposal stores of environmental obligations. We're not geographically situated to take competitive advantage of large-scale renewable sources. We can do that on some scale, up to 200 kW for sure, and perhaps up to 1 megawatt. But we do have some limitations on the North Peninsula for very, very large renewable opportunities. Perhaps we can overcome those gaps. We've had, we're about ready to promote grants from the state for low-income community solar, where housing agencies as well as assistance groups have the opportunity to essentially get community solar almost fully funded, where the generation for that community solar can be applied to low-income customers. And there is some interest in our county from various agencies, and we want to facilitate that. But on low interest in community solar, unless there's that funding, there's not much interest because it does have to line out for other customers. But we're hoping to take advantage of the low-income community solar grants to alleviate bills for low-income customers. I think F and G is an error, Sean. We're going to have to reorder that.
It's F and G is one sentence. It should be they're one thing.
Yeah. Okay. Unknowns, compliant cost, effectiveness of conservation rates. Legislation, new requirements come at us every day, and we have to stay on top of that, and we have to plan for that.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
Can I? Sorry, I need to. Go back to F&G for a second. Low interest in community solar due to low financial returns. But Clallam has one of the highest participation in the rooftop solar in the state, as I understand it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. We have well over 400 interconnects, probably 410 now. And I think there's only two other PUDs on a per capita basis has higher saturation. But when we did our community solar, we did get a grant to fund a portion of it, and we were able to implement a 30 kW community solar and SWIM. But in absence of grants, there's not much of a financial return, if any, on those projects. So we have to take advantage of grants, basically. And to be honest with you, part of the problem is the same system in our county compared to, let's say, areas of eastern Washington, the generation is about 20 to 25% less. So we're a little bit handicapped in that area.
Yeah, I guess maybe I would maybe reword that and say while we've had historic interest in rooftop solar, we're having trouble with community solar due to low financial returns. Or something like that.
Yeah, Jim, I totally agree. I do not like this wording. It's kind of it's jerky. It's not well done. We will modify F combination G to make it more clear and understanding and meaningful.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and we also we're making some changes and have over the last several months, but we do have some underdeveloped relationships with local environmental stakeholders and group, both electric and water, and we're working on those issues and developing plans to improve that. For strategic initiatives, we've added introduce and evaluate fleet electric vehicles. We're also making a change to be a little more comprehensive, procure, recycle, and dispose of equipment and materials in an environmentally safe manner. I think we were narrow in the recycle stuff. We specifically said fluorescent lamps, metals, and liquids. We're just going to make that more general. Of course, related to that, and we're doing that now this year for complete first responder and backup training for all spills. Brett Magger and Mike Hill, as well as the superintendents, are really focused on that. Develop relationships, improve communication, collaborate with environmental stakeholders and groups, speaking to the gap. One thing we're doing here actually this week is to meet with PNNL, as well as NODC and a vendor to take a look at some of this, as well as some grant opportunities potentially with microgrids and some new technology. And once again, incorporate climate change, environmental impacts, and project cost analysis. So basically, we have to look long term. We've got to consider changes in climate change, what are the consequences, environmental, as well as financial, and build that into our project cost analysis, cost-benefit analysis. Okay, for electric specifically, we need to develop and maintain a clean energy implementation plan to reduce CO2 emissions. And we have one, but that is an ongoing requirement that changes as Department of Commerce rolls out CETA requirements, and we have more information made available to us. We also want to plan and develop a sustainable EV charging infrastructure. As you know, we've submitted grants with Energy Northwest to develop a Highway 101 charging corridor. There's a new round of grants coming up this fall that we're going to apply for. We didn't quite make the award for the last grant that came out, I believe, earlier this month. As a matter of fact, none of the Highway 101 grants were awarded. That includes Jefferson, Mason, and Clallam PD. But they are going to award a 101 grant. It's a matter of time. It's a major state initiative. And we're on board with that. We already have charging station designs lined up, as well as customers who are interested in siting those. For water, we... Yes.
John, does this also include, when you say EV charging infrastructure, does this include the idea that all these people that buy EVs and hook them up to their houses, charge them at their house, like you pointed out some weeks ago, actually creates income for the PUD? Would that be sort of assessed in this one, this bullet here?
Yeah, yes, it would. So a good point in recalling the earlier presentation. In general, our preference for people in this county, residents, even owners of fleet, are to charge at homes or existing businesses. But we do have to take care of well-traveled ways for people
right.
coming into town to be able to charge, and those chargers are generally faster charger and require more robust electrical infrastructure.
Right.
We have to do both.
Okay.
While our preference is at-home charging for people who live and work here, we do have to account for all the tourists or when you need a fast charge. So, yeah, we're working both angles on that, Jim.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, for water, there's an initiative to track effectiveness of revenue impact of conservation rates. As you're aware, as the board approved a laddered or stepped rate structure, we have to evaluate the impact on conservation, where the more water you use, the higher unit cost you pay. And at some point, we might even get into looking at some things on the electric side for that. But for water, we're going to evaluate the outcome of our new rate structure. Okay, track cost and compliance of water right mitigation and discharge permits. This is one of the most complex issues in this county. I know I'm an electrical guy, but I have the utmost respect for a water department who really have to go the extra mile and talk to a lot of entities to achieve their objectives. Also, identify and track climate change-related project costs. This may even open the door to grants in the future, FEMA or otherwise. For the electrical KPIs, green, we're describing as carbon neutral, which is our 2030 objective. And fortunately, due to our EIA renewable energy credits, more than cover the slither of carbon source we get from BPA, we are carbon neutral and we want to stay there. Part of the problem is we expect a lot of load growth through vehicles and other reasons, even growth, population growth. Our objective is to ensure we stay carbon neutral even as our load increases over the next decade and two decades and beyond. And for now, if we're carbon neutral, we're satisfactory. If we do not achieve carbon neutral, that starts to be a warning sign. And if we're more than 10% carbon supply, that's a problem. And we need to take a more prompt and aggressive action to meet the requirements or to stay compliant. For electric, of course, we have for actual environmental citations. If we are not cited, we're good. If we're under an investigation of a violation, that's a warning sign. Any violation, that's a failure on our part. Okay, we've added water conservation revenue, average gallons per day for residential for May through September, summertime. Green, 150 to 225, yellow, 225 to 400. Red is either less than 150 or greater than 400. And then for winter time, we have different numbers, 100, 150, 150, 225, and red is less than 100 or greater than 225. Any questions on environmental responsibility?
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so just one quick question. Nowhere in here are we setting up a metric that we don't have control over. For example, water rights. Have we avoided that sufficiently?
We have gaps and we have a lot of unknowns with respect to water rights. I wish Tom was here, who might be able to address it. Specifically, but with respect to water rights, we're pretty robust here, I don't think we're going to get in trouble on that. As time goes on, we might make modifications, but I don't see where there would be additions, although we can talk to Tom.
No, I'm not advocating additions, but, traditionally, historically, Department of Ecology has been pretty difficult to work with on those. So,
I can say that more recently, we are working closely with the county. You see, the part of the county, the PUD, Department of Ecology, have similar interests, but we also have somewhat divergent interests. But Tom and his group is working rather productively with stakeholders in the counties and municipalities, tribes, ecology, and the county to try to come towards a solution, at least for the Carlsberg water system, which is a high-profile issue before us now. So I would say, yes, historically, ecology is sometimes difficult to work with, but we're getting a degree of cooperation and alignment of interest with ecology, which is a good thing.
Thank you.
Any other questions or thoughts on this one, commissioners?
For me.
All right, so I will move on to continuous performance improvement, and this is a new one for Jamie this year.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Yeah, that would be the first change that I have inherited this objective from IT manager Steve Schaffer. And under the continuous performance improvement, you will see, I see leveraging is highlighted, but I believe that was in the pre-existing strategic plan. So I don't think that is a new addition. But under the picture of excellence, you know, Sean mentioned that you'll see a lot of the feedback and input we received from our employee survey incorporated into some of these changes that we are presenting in the strategic plan. And right here under this picture of excellence, you know, we put an emphasis in there that our employees are empowered. They are an integral part to any continuous improvement at the utility. And, you know, that in hand just trickles throughout our community, we've always seen. So we wanted to create a culture where all of our employees are empowered to continuously strive for new ways to improve and incorporate technology and information systems are leveraged for optimum use and performance. So working through this, we identified and added some big gaps to that picture of excellence. One was insufficiently effective vertical communication to fully assess and address employee suggestions, inefficient or redundant processes, inconsistent empowerment of employees, employee survey results indicate a need for clearer communication, and lack of participation in the employee survey. So under the strategic initiatives to help close those gaps, we'd like to add supervisor training. John touched base on just the new group of managers and supervisors we have. We've, you know, had continuous retirements over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. You know, we knew that we were going to see that, and so we have this new group that, you know, if we can get them up on training and help unify everything here, we believe it will help close some of those gaps. Revamp our staff appraisals and salary matrix. Expand, promote, and implement employee suggestion programs and ad hoc evaluation committee. Identify and eliminate redundant processes. And we'd also like to add interdepartmental awareness training. We think those would be all great additions that we need to emphasize on that would help us close our gaps. And so to measure that, we have set up three new for this page, key performance indicators. One, percentage of employees that participate in the survey. This was our employee survey, and we'd like to increase that amount, and I think through awareness and then seeing that we take that feedback and, you know, put it into our policies and our programs will help them, you know, share their voice a little bit more through the employee survey. The other one is our RP3 score. That was touched on early on our award there. And then the SEP, which is the Smart Energy Provider Program, we'd like to include that as a KPI to make sure and measure our continuous performance improvement. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't see it on here, so I guess maybe we don't. Do any of our suggestion programs or other employee improvement process suggestions or anything offer a financial incentive?
We do. We have our Employees Excellence Award, and so that has been tied to employee suggestions. I remember many moons ago, you know, you used to get a mug if you made a suggestion that was used and, you know, helped save money or different things, create efficiencies. But we do. Our Employee Excellence Award is used a lot to recognize employees that make suggestions and help implement things that are, you know, cost effective or creating efficiencies here at the district.
And we also have awards for groups that are safe to them. So if we have a safety award that if a line crew or something is safe for a certain duration of time, they get recognized and awarded for that. And since I've taken over, Jamie and I have implemented coffee and conversations with the general manager, which has been really successful. I think Jamie and I both enjoy engaging with the employees that way. We've also developed a really good working relationship with our union president, and we've also been engaging employees more one-on-one out in the field and at their work sites. I think you're going to see a shift in morale that maybe wasn't there before, and it's been real positive, I think, this year as far as employee engagement and encouraging employees to actively participate in offering their ideas and suggestions and ways that we can improve. It's been pretty exciting to see the level of engagement from the employees in that regard.
Okay, thanks. I just need to clarify here. You used the term awards, and I heard get a mug, get an award. What I was asking, is there anything actually a dollar amount?
Yes, there is. I have been here for over 20 years, so I remember the days of the mugs, and we have gotten away from that.
Thank you.
We do. It is monetary amounts that are used in gift cards or allotments to the employees.
All right.
And Jim, this is Steve. We did have that as a KPI in this continuous performance improvement, but we've moved it over to attract and retain great people, which is now another one of Jamie's.
Yeah.
So you'll see that there is a monetary piece that used to be a KPI for this one, but now we've moved it to a different objective.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? I think, Will, did you have something?
Yeah, well, we've been at this an hour and a half. It looks like we've got quite a few pages to go, so I would say we need a five-minute break. So let's try to be back here at about 3 minutes after the hour.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, we're missing a few people, but hopefully they'll show up here shortly.
Is Jim back? Well, I can't see him on my
phone. I don't see him. I don't think he is.
Who are you asking? I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
I didn't see your video. Sorry
Jim. Okay, well, let's go ahead and proceed on continuous performance improvement. I always like that one.
That's the one we just got done, so now we're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well,
managed resource portfolio.
I need to improve then.
So, John, it looks like you get to talk again.
Okay. I'll try not to put people to sleep. So, on this one, we completely rewrote the definition. We previously were optimizing between the supply and demand requirements over both short and long term, allows us to improve efficiency, meet regulatory requirements, and meet customer needs and expectations. That new proposed definition is a low-falling BPA customer that has an optimized BPA supply that is compliant with Washington State SEED as well as other regulatory requirements that meet customer needs and expectations in a manner consistent with the district's mission. For water, continually optimized portfolio meeting all resource requirements. Picture of excellence, maintain an optimized portfolio, maximizing carbon-free power supply and water supply while meeting the district's mission. The effects of climate change are factored into all resource availability and use. water rights are secured as soon as possible for full build out of existing retail service areas. Previously, the picture of excellence was simply continually optimized portfolio meeting resource requirements at the lowest cost. This does allow us a little bit of latitude. You know, you have to look long term, and the long term, lowest cost may not be today's lowest cost. So it's a little bit more flexible than the previous definition. For identified big gaps, I'm sorry, my screen is cut off at the bottom. I think I'm maybe doing something. Sean, can...
Yeah, it's the lack of a power/risk manager. That's the only addition to the big gaps.
Okay, so basically, right now I'm filling the role of power manager, and Sean and myself and others are assuming the risk manager. But long term, that may not be the best option. Most utilities have a designated power/risk manager, and we're going to work towards that goal long term. We also want to complete the deployment of AMI. AMI is critical for time of use rates, as well as some distribution automation functions, demand response. Through AMI, we hope to leverage demand response to reduce peak loads, lower power supply costs. The demand portion of our BPA bill is pretty significant, and through AMI and programs for demand response and automation, as well as improving information more generally, will allow us in the long term to reduce costs. Leverage AMI for the maximum benefit. Also, implement time of race use, time of race and demand response pilot projects based on power procurement cost offsets. So the idea here is to find projects and initiatives that will allow our customers who are interested in doing so to do time of use rates and demand response, where if we reduce our power procurement costs for that effort, the customer who is making that implementation will derive the overwhelming preponderance of the cost reduction in power supply. For example, if somebody allows us to integrate with their hot water heater and is willing to allow to limit response in the coldest days of the year, in the morning when we have system peak, if we derive a lower power supply bill because of that, those customers would derive the benefit, the same as time of use more generally for other customers. If they feel they can shift their usage in ways that's advantageous to the PUD, and the PUD derives a benefit, lower cost of power supply, then the customers doing so will derive the preponderance of the benefit, at least 90%. There would be perhaps 10% PUD administration and cost incurred for implementing the program, but the customer would get almost all the dollars saved.
Hey, John.
Yes, sir.
That really sounds good. I think it might be helpful for our customers to work the word customer into that statement someplace, and maybe a term like power procurement cost offsets. Most people don't know what that means, but maybe if you just said cost savings or something, that would benefit both the PUD and the customer. Make it look, you know, like this is really designed to help the customers as well as the PUD.
Jim, that's a good suggestion. Sometimes I forget we're looking at an audience beyond power. So, Sean, do you have that noted?
Yeah, I wrote that down, John.
All right, good suggestion.
All right,
okay, on the water side, we have new initiatives, develop strategies for meeting full build-out demand for each water system. So, water mitigation and credits are something that we've got to be on the lookout to satisfy the future potential demand of the water systems. Also identify strategies for groundwater storage in the Dungeness Basin. Other groups are looking at this as well, but in layman terms, basically this is allowing excess discharge from a river that would normally rapidly go into the straits. Perhaps it would be diverted into an area with a porous fill that actually recharges a reservoir fairly directly. There's a lot of information out there, and Tom and the water group are really interested in and looking into that where it might benefit us. Most of these are done, to my knowledge, in places like Arizona and some places in California and other places too. And maintain all water services in active compliance. No out of tolerance nitrates or turbidity or any of the things that causes us to issue water alerts. Okay, key performance indicators. We made a little bit of a change here. We used to have conservation and tier two costs, but when you really looked at it, it did not make a whole lot of sense. The numbers we had were a little bit dated, and also tier two costs are subject to fluctuations. So for conservation, green means that our conservation costs are less than our tier two cost, according to the analysis through the Northwest Power Council and the worksheets that we have through BPA to evaluate what the benefit of conservation is. And if conservation cost is less than tier two cost, we're being good. It's a good thing to be. A little bit more than tier two cost, 100 and 110%, we would fall into the yellow. And if it's more than 110% tier two cost, we're doing something wrong. There should be some value of conservation that's within the tier two cost or less. We wanted to add electric system losses to the KPI indicators. Now, in our system, we have gradually reduced our losses in unregistered energy through the AMI project and conductor rebuilds, larger conductors, less energy losses. We've implemented transformer loading guidance that basically requires efficient transformers consistent with federal regulations, actually. And we reduced no load losses on the transformers as well as line losses in the conductors. And we're bringing that down, and our objective is to take it under 5%. If we're in 5% to 5.5%, that's warning. And if we're above 5.5%, that is generally not good. This is wasted energy. The energy loss between what BPA meters us as and what we meter our retail customers. And these losses, we keep track of them through a sophisticated process and analysis, and we're pretty confident that we've got it within probably 0.1% of actual. Water per system, the distribution system loss rate, are within DOH water use efficiency standards. Standards below 10% is green. If we're between 10 and 15% loss rate, yellow, and 15% loss rate or more is red. And that may seem kind of high, but, this is pretty typical of all water utilities. You're doing well to keep your loss rate 10% or less. Okay, and lastly, the ratio of water rights supplied to full build out. 100% or greater, that means that we can build out our LUDs without any concern of future water rights. Yellow, 80 to 100%, red, 80% or less.
Hey, John. I had a question. You, earlier on in one of the slides, we talked about supply chain issues and so forth. And I'm wondering if either there or under resource portfolio, we might want to say something about developing a plan for implementing a reserve policy on key components of our system, i.e. transformers, poles, whatever, and kind of so that we have a metric that shows that we're trying to get to a certain percent or, per year or something like that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this at previous board meetings. I think when I gave a previous transformer update, that was a suggestion that we look at inventory levels. And I guess we need to, if we do that, and we actually incorporate that, we're going to do it regardless. But if we actually incorporate the strategic plan, I think we need to look at the best place to do that. And off the top of my head, I don't think it would go into the resource portfolio, but it might go in another initiative.
That's fine. It doesn't matter where, but I think it's, we're going to do it, and it's one of those long-term things, you know, because you don't know when the worst-case scenario is going to happen anyway. So it doesn't matter where.
Yeah, so, yeah, the COVID and the Ukraine war is outside of a lot of experiences, and our inventory that we thought at up to 12 months was fine to go through any storm event or interruption in the supply chain. In the last 3 years, that very likely may not have been enough.
So maybe we could call it a resiliency kind of initiative or something.
Yeah, I think we can come up with some language that addresses that. We just need to find the most effective place in the plan to address that. And it would be primarily transformers, but it could include conductors, underground cable, underground accessories, and perhaps even transformer poles.
Yeah, right. We talked about this at a previous meeting, and the commission directed staff to review our stocking philosophy, not just electrical, but also water and so on. So,
yeah, I think it'd be very appropriate to include some language in the strategic plan since we're doing that.
Yeah,
anyway.
We're already doing it, so it's a good idea to.
Yeah, I think it would be best in something like manage risk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm thinking this is Nicole, perhaps that or a reliable supply.
Yeah, you know, I like it could go either way, but I actually like manage risk because that really, you know, points to it. Yeah. And maybe manage external risk.
Yeah, external. It will be one of, you know, it's a tough one because it is a cost pressure to increase our inventory. So, we'll, like you said, it's something that we're already looking into.
Yeah.
It would be appropriate under managed risk external.
Yeah, and even though it's going to cost more keeping an inventory and keeping unused materials for perhaps an extra year, when you look at cost, it may be small compared to the consequences and what
mm-hmm.
we're saying. So, yeah.
Well, you have to strike a balance between tying up too much revenue in stocked items versus preparing for these little things, well, not little, these big things that can happen.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I've read some literature that actually identified Clallam County as one of 20 national counties, rural counties, that had growth higher than the national average last year. So basically, evidently, Clallam County is booming. With respect to new development.
Wow.
Any more questions on manager resource portfolio?
All right, thanks, John. Nicole, you are up on influence regulatory issues.
Okay. Let me put my two slides up here.
Okay, so on influence regulatory issues, we previously just had under the definition educating and informed customers, and we wanted to expand that out since we're talking about regulatory issues to elected officials. And then we added in proposed or final legislation. And then under the picture of excellence, the highlighted area there, we did initially just have that we received issue analysis from Laputa, which we do, but we also receive that from other of our affiliated organizations, and so we wanted to make sure we were including all of those sources. Not much changed otherwise under strategic initiatives. We had listed out various agencies WPUDA, WPAG, PPC, and so instead we wanted to just make it inclusive of stakeholders and affiliated committees and organizations, because I know Tom had specified meeting with certain stakeholder groups on behalf of the water department, and so we felt like this was just more inclusive of everybody that we work with. Under number three, we used to just have monitor and provide comments. And we wanted to add in also being responsive to requests for comment, because WPUDA will often reach out to the PUDs and ask that we, leverage our combined power to provide comment to various issues. So they do reach out to us. Now, under the KPIs, we strengthened them up a bit. It used to be that if we were, on average, attending meetings 75% or more, we consider that green. We've upped it to 85% now because everybody's been doing a really good job. As you know, we have the commissioners and many staff are allocated in the list of committees and organizations that we belong to. They're allocated as delegates and alternates, and the commissioners vote on that every January. And so we talked about it at the beginning of this year about if you're the delegate and you can't make it, to please let your alternate know. So we make sure that we always have a presence at the table of these different meetings. And that's been going really well, and it's helped. And I'm no longer hearing feedback from groups about, hey, how come we don't see the PUD there? So that's been important. So we decided to go ahead and up those KPIs a little bit to give us, we want to always have kind of a stretch goal here. And then there actually was a change under the second KPI. It was relevant quarterly communication, and we've changed that to relevant monthly, print or digital, because we don't just have communication in the quarterly hotline or the monthly employee newsletter. We also have various channels through the website and social media as well that we get word of mouth and on issues out to. So every month we should have something out there. And that's just kind of an expectation. So green is 100%, and anything less than that, we aren't getting our message out there. So does anybody have any questions or comments on this slide? If not, we can move on to the next one. Let me scroll down here. So enhanced customer partnerships, and I think, Jim, you mentioned something earlier that Jamie might have been saying that we could put in this area. The previous definition just said by including customers, and we wanted to change it to engaging customers and community partners, because we work with other, or part of our list of committees and organizations, we work with the EDC, we work with the Chambers of Commerce, we work with the schools, we work with the Building Association. We've got a lot of community partners, and so we wanted that to be reflective of that. Under the picture of excellence, we did previously say that customers are strong advocates for the district and public utilities. We still want them to be advocates and be well informed, but we wanted to add that they trust the district as a subject matter expert. And that where that comes into play is that surveys that have previously been done have and surveys that WPUDA has had done have indicated that with the advancement of social media, people will go to social media and believe what anybody writes out there. And it used to be that customers would go to their bank, they would go to their dealership, they would go to their utility if they had a question about something, because those were the subject matter experts. And we want to try to build that relationship back up so that we're the trusted experts. Under the identified big gaps, we used to have it as lack of awareness, and we wanted to specify that it's a decreasing awareness. And this is something that WPUDA has also tracked, and it has to do with the further we get away from the folks who remember the first initiative in the state and the Grange movement, that new people moving into the state, younger people having their first utility bills, their first apartment, their first house, they just know that the lights are on, and they don't understand the benefits of public power. That's what we were talking about earlier, Jim. So we want to provide, and I think your idea there of putting that in the definition, what's a PUD as opposed to an IOU, and define those, and that we're governed by an elected, local control, elected board of officials, all these are important Part C, inconsistent outbound communications undermine customer confidence. And that's reflective of just what I was talking about with customers that say, well, I heard this, or they see it on social media, or they're hearing things, scary stories about brownouts and rolling blackouts and AMI and scary stories that they see on the internet, or it might be a story that is about, we had one recently, that was really more reflective of the IOUs than it that was the PUDs, but we need to make sure that, that customers consistently get the message about us being a publicly owned utility and the local control. Measuring district participation in local committees and organizations, that's part of that partnership, and we are tracking that as the KPI on the previous slide, but we're also tracking it as part of now that we're getting back into real-time events, things like participating in the home shows and the county fair and Riverfest, and when we partner with enough, you know, another local organization, like Jamie just went and spoke to the vocational forum that they held at the Swim High School. So we want to have people be turning to us as a resource. Needing to enhance customer experience by eliminating bottlenecks and sources of frustration. This is going to be related to good feedback from customer service and feedback that we get through public comment and through our email about where we might be experiencing something. You know, I'd like to start tracking the top five reasons perhaps that the customer service reps are getting phone calls or emails, and if we can identify them and see where we can streamline something so that it makes for a better customer experience. We integrated a lot of online forms during COVID that really helped, and the customers are utilizing the heck out of it. So that was actually a side benefit going forward, but where else can we improve in that area? And then under the initiatives, we want to integrate any customer service feedback back into our strategic plan when we do that deep dive every 3 to 5 years. And then we've looked at maybe using SurveyMonkey to do just some informal surveys. So you have a comprehensive customer survey that you have a consultant do that's statistically valid, but then there's no reason we can't do informal single question SurveyMonkey surveys that we could post to social media or something and put out there for customer engagement. Because they do really like to engage on social media and chat, and it makes them feel like there's a person behind what they're experiencing. So we changed the website users. We left the same, and I'm curious to see how that changes now that people are doing things in person. And I saw that our COVID dashboard for the county dropped down to 500 and something. It was 700 and something last week, so hopefully that means we can reopen again in the next few weeks. The Facebook engagement, that 20% likes to customer ratio was a stretch because we were at 11%, and I think we're more than that now. So I had boosted it up because we've got really good engagement for a utility. And then we used to have Clallam PUD representation at community and local association meetings. And I think we're covering that with the previous slide with engaging with partners that are part of our committees and organizations. So I wanted to change this to community outreach and events. And so that will be things like the fair, the home shows, Riverfest. We're trying to find all these things that we can be involved with, especially with kids and potential for vocational education. And then Tom had asked for the water stakeholder engagement, and I don't remember the specific entities that he had in mind, but he wanted to create more of a program specifically related to water issues. So I don't have a second slide on that. So does anybody have any questions about this one?
Somehow we need to make sure that PUD employees present a consistent message to the public and just, you know, truthful facts. I've been approached by people about the transformer issue. They say, oh, I talked to somebody at the PUD, and they told me X, Y, Z, and it's usually way off base, or sometimes it's off base. So not sure how we do that, but I think we could do a better job of making sure that all employees have enough facts so they can present those to the public and to our customers.
Yes, part of what we do is what the employees appreciate is if they hear about it before they hear about it from the customers, so they know what's out there. So when we issue a news release, it goes out to all employees saying, hey, this is the news release that we're sending out. We provide departmental updates in the employee newsletter. But one of the things I've been interested in, too, is Energy Northwest had developed a really cool, like a talking points type of thing for employees that gives them fast facts and things. And it's a handy little, you know, pocket-sized guide. And I'm interested in pursuing something like that because I thought that would be quite useful.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And that would be something that then we could take as a project, and that could go on the projects matrix. Anybody else have anything on this slide? If not, I guess you can go forward, Sean.
Thanks, Nicole. Appreciate it. All right. So next is build on our safety culture. And so, Larry, this is your department.
Hey. Okay. The strategic planning training that we had recently was extremely good, one of the best we've ever done for a strategic plan. We revamped most of what we did for the entire safety culture. I'll start out with the definition. Safety-first culture supports employee and public safety and aids in preventing injuries, casualties, and property damage, which mitigates risk to the district public. And then under the picture of excellence, we said safety is fully incorporated into the work culture such that all employees continually recognize personal and public safety as the primary concern in all work-related activities. District maintains compliance with all federal and state safety regulations and recognizes industry best practices. District recognized for its safety program for awards. We changed that. Identifying the big gaps for the picture of excellence, need to address and reduce most common causes of injuries. We do keep a list of them and we track them to see where we're going to go with our next safety program. B, need to reduce recordable injuries and reduce vehicle and property damage. We do track that. This one is interesting. Unsure if PPE is being uniformly proper and utilized. We have in the past, but it needs to be tracked closer. Safety committee lacks structure and authority. That was a good one to re-look at. We need to make sure that whoever was involved had the authority to make some changes, which we have done recently. Safety recognition program not fully applied. That just came into play as of November of last year, so we're working on that. L&I experience factor higher than industry standard. The industry standard is normally 1. As of last year, we ended up at 1.2, but it's always better to work towards making it that much better. Emergency supply procurement not completed. There are some things that we still need to gather up. I'm not quite sure. I have to check the materials to see where we're at. Lack of accountability with safety-related injuries and damages incurred. Some of the initiatives that we have to work on to be able to make the picture of excellence, provide district-wide employee education on the impact and cost of L&I experience factor. Not only does it cost the company, it costs the employee and they don't realize it. So we have to educate them. Identify core categories, light duty opportunities district-wide. This is a new one for me. In-house L&I accident investigation training, that's something that can be done, that will be helpful. Ensure documentation of accident injury investigations are complete. Explore new avenues for safety education and training for customers, contractors, and employees. Complete monthly safety, field safety audits. Recognize work groups that are 1 year accident free. Utilize existing performance and excellence for safety recognition. The other two already existing, ensure personnel are provided and utilize quality, reliable, and up-to-date personal protection, equipment, and safety supplies. All personnel maintain a clean and hazard-free workspace and environment. Something that was added in this one here was comply with all NESC, WAC rules, and OSHA safety requirements. Is something that we do follow, but we need to be closely involved. Restructure safety committee team and authority to enable decision making, just as I had said earlier. Complete the procurement ERRP supplies, which I'll talk about. Develop a hazard mitigation plan for each department. That's something that we have not done, but we will have to be doing it. Under the key performance indicators, lost time injuries reported per quarter, one or less, we're in the green. If we have two or more, we're in the yellow. If it's red, that means we've had four, and that's something we have to be discussing and working on. Accidents, injuries, damage investigations completed. They are green if they're 100% within the four working days. That is going to have to be worked out. Yellow is 100% after eight working days, and if you have to do it in more than 8 days, you're in the red. You've got to get to it. Recognition of department with 1 year accident free. If a crew goes green annually, they get an award. Yellow would be biannually, and red would be biannually. Or did I say that right? We get more than that. I don't know how that's spelled out. LNI experience factor. If it's one or less, we're in the green. 1 to 1.15 is a yellow, and 1.5 is red. Quarterly field employee safety audits, 3 per quarter, as I had mentioned earlier, you're in the green. If you have 2 to 3 in that quarter, you're out of compliance. Anything less than 2, we better be working on correcting those issues, see why we're not getting those things done. Are there any questions under this?
Larry, did we have any safety award programs that for groups that meet the, say, the departments within the one-year accident-free? Is there any program like that?
Yes, and it's exactly what Jamie had talked about earlier. It ties in with the Excellence Award. We just put an employee with it or a group, and, again, it's monetary.
But that's it's specific to safety or?
Yes, it ties with it.
Yeah, that seems to work for peer pressure. You know, people will stop work if they see unsafe conditions and so on, but good.
Good. That's all I have. There's nothing else.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Jamie, you are back up for attract and retain great people.
Okay. So regarding our strategic objective of attract and retain great people, we left the definition as it was or how it existed. But we did in the picture of excellence add that the district is a premier employer with outstanding employees. The district attracts and retains great employees that are highly skilled and provide exceptional service as ambassadors to the district. Then we went down through the big gaps to our picture of excellence. And again, this was a lot of key stuff that we took from the employee survey. And so we really hope that employees, you know, through some of these strategic initiatives, see the changes that they can be part of making. So we added to the big gaps that objective performance criteria and assessments are not well defined, consistently applied for all employees. We do not have a way to regularly engage employees. We have difficulty recruiting relevantly skilled individuals for all positions on the Olympic Peninsula. Now, that used to be some of our key positions like linemen or tradesmen, and we're seeing that, you know, isn't holding true anymore. Customer service positions, we are not seeing the number of applications that we used to have. The application process needs to be updated and streamlined. We are definitely in the Stone Ages when it comes to applying for positions here at the district externally. Inaccurate performance appraisals. We want to have a new criteria that Sean and I are working on and looking into added into our performance appraisals. Staff employee compensation based on performance, position longevity, market, and promotions is not fully objective. Misalignment between evolving employee expectations and the district's core values. Lack of engagement, awareness between managers, supervisors, and their employees. Now, to identify those gaps or to address the gaps, we added into the strategic initiatives survey supervisors, managers to identify needs training and provide that training in-house if possible. We are already looking at, like we said, with our turnover of newer management, we actually have a training this month that will be coming in and getting them up to speed on the industry and the expectations of the district. Update employee handbook on a biannual basis. So there was, I think it was a 17-year gap last time. We updated the employee handbook, and the feedback from employees, they really appreciated it. We went out and did in-face meetings, and so we're going to make that on a more regular basis so that consistently stays in front of our employees and current. Promote and encourage employee growth and advancement through available, relevant, and applicable training. Complete comprehensive outside compensation and benefits analysis every 2 years. And again, we are shortening that time frame so that we can stay current and help us attract and retain all the great employees that we currently have and are going to have. Conduct monthly small group meetings with general manager and all employee meetings every 2 years. By putting it here in the strategic plan, it makes it, it's there, it's public, it's a foundation, and we are held accountable to that. Develop and pay performance defined comp ratio component in the staff salary program. Develop an employee engagement committee. Conduct annual employee surveys and incorporate feedback. Assure employees understand strategic plan and its benefits. Develop any non-monetary benefits. Implement NeoGov applicant tracking software that will address that archaic application process we have. And then host quarterly empowering video screenings to help inspire employees to become ambassadors. I know an example, Ben Phillips in engineering, has done presentations to the board before, and we thought that would be a great idea for him to host kind of a lunch and learn where all of our new employees can go in and get to see projects that we're working on and, have the source right there to ask the questions to. So all of our key performance indicators in this page either got updated or we added a new one. You'll see it there at the bottom. So the performance appraisals turned in on time. That one's very important. We adjusted the red to greater than 30 days. Prior it said 15 days, and that was consistent with within the first pay period. The first pay period is 15-day window. So we thought there was kind of a duplicate, not accurately measuring it, so we increased that to 30 days. The next one we made an adjustment to is non-retirement attrition in the last 12 months. Now, in the past, retirement was part of that, and that's just a natural course. We love when somebody gets to transition into retirement. They've served all their years here at the district. And but we thought when we have a problem is when they're non-retirement, that turnover, either voluntary or involuntary. So we wanted to measure that. We thought that would give us a better pulse on everything. HR trainings and meetings attendance. So again, going through the employee meet or employee survey, we thought of ways to create engagement, but then we also need the participation. So this will be a great measure for us to be able to see, if those meetings and the trainings, the coffee and conversations, if all of those are adding value for our employees. RP3 score, that is specific to the workforce development section of the RP3 award. That has been in there before, but we did adjust the numbers on that. John might have made it a little bit harder for us, but that's okay. It's a great one to strive for. And then lastly is monthly employee recognition. There is not a consistent, we have these programs, but are we using them on a monthly basis? So we wanted to hold all managers, supervisors accountable and have added that in there. And we'll start measuring how we are recognizing our employees on a monthly basis and not just sporadically throughout the year. Any questions?
Well, Jamie, my only concern on that is that when you have a quota, I don't see anything wrong with recognizing employees, but I don't want people just to be recognizing employees because there's a quota out
there. Correct. Yeah. So One way we've implemented a new area is the employee spotlight. That is in the employee web newsletter, and then also on our virtual bulletin boards. You know, so that will be kind of like a non-monetary, but it's definitely recognizing an employee. And we're also not only looking at the yearly service awards that we do for kind of those monumental points in somebody's career, 5 years, 10 years, 35 years, what it goes up to. We're also looking at our employees every month, who is hitting their first year at the PUD, who's hitting their 26th year at the PUD, so some of those odd years. So I think we're going to see ways that, you know, don't make us feel like we have to hit a quota, but it creates a consistency that will benefit the employees.
Great. Yeah, Jamie, I'll add that, you know, we generally have not had a problem basically with respect to quota, but, you know, historically, some departments have not previously recognized employees. The position was, well, you're doing your job. You're doing, you know, what you're supposed to do. And that doesn't work when you have variations between different departments and how they approach awards. You know, it has to be fairly, you know, it has to be fair and consistent with that throughout the district. And that monthly employee recognition is to light a fire and make sure that departments, department heads and supervision are paying attention to this.
Great. Thank you for the clarification.
Sammy, just one question. Is there a line of sight relationship between our strategic initiatives and performance evaluation as far as goals, objectives, and accomplishments?
Yeah, I would say we work on that. We strive for that. It is not actually built into the form. So I know for myself with my staff, or when I work with my manager on my own performance appraisal, I do pull these strategic initiatives and then list how the accomplishments fall into that, so that my staff, you know, who don't have to, you know, go for 2 days and help make suggestions to this, get to see how they play a part in it and how important it is. But we want to get that on a more regular basis so that it's in the form, and that's part of our changes we're looking at with our performance appraisals.
Okay, sounds great. Thank
yeah.
you.
Will, you think you might move your mic up a little bit? You're getting very soft.
I'm falling asleep here. No, I'm not. Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions for Jamie on this one? All right, thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right, manage risk. Sorry, John, but you're back up on this one, too.
Okay, and I think Lori's going to help me out too.
Right, I can start on this one. In my controller auditing officer role, I am dealing with our auditors every year, and they ask a lot of questions regarding how we manage internal risk as it relates to things like financial reporting, potential loss and fraud. And I actually think we do a pretty decent job identifying areas of weaknesses in our processes and creating internal controls to mitigate that. And that's evidenced by the success that we've had in our audits. But while we're managing it, we're also making sure that we're complying with regulations that we were required to follow as a public agency. Those processes are pretty siloed. And as we discussed this in our meetings, we felt like we could very much benefit from having a more formal, comprehensive risk management program to make sure we're doing everything that we need to do as a public agency. So that led us to revamping our picture of excellence. It now reads, the district adheres to a more formal risk management program and identifies and analyzes risks to the district strategic objectives to control or minimize loss and other adverse results. So while a lot of organizations have a designated person managing risk, for the district, it makes more sense to work as a committee and with area experts working together to analyze and evaluate internal controls. We would like to move forward to that process this year so we can have a real formal process in place to look at risk internally. One of the gaps that we identified in going through this was the lack of manager supervisor training in procurement regulations. And as has already been mentioned a couple of times in this process, we do have a lot of new managers and supervisors that just aren't aware of everything that we're required to do as a public agency. So this year, to help with that, we're hoping to review our procurement process and then do formal trainings with managers and supervisors so they're aware of what needs to happen when we do purchases for the district. Another thing that we're going to be doing as an initiative is to perform risk assessments by department. And that will include doing random regular audits of different functions, but especially high-risk functions like cash handling, and that should give us good information on where we can improve on our processes. Another gap to the picture of excellence was the lack of documented backup plan to in place to address critical staff functions. And as we've been talking about, we have a lot of new people, whether it's because of retirement or people moving into different positions within the district. There is a need for creating a backup plan and doing cross-training for critical functions such as payroll, so that if something unexpected happens, we have people in place that can staff those positions and keep critical work going. I think, John, you were going to address a couple of the initiatives.
On number five, incorporate risk, cost avoidance, and CIP or capital improvement plans and strategic project financial analysis. We touched on that earlier, but incorporate risk as a cost element when you evaluate cost benefits of projects and initiatives. Now, that's pretty important. And is there a benefit? Is there a risk mitigated? What is the? How do you place a dollar value or a potential of a risk and build that into your analysis? And we're doing that on all of our engineered projects, and we're going to be doing that in some of the other projects as well. And number seven, complete and implement a comprehensive physical security policy. Right now, we have this information in a variety of separate policies and documents. And as part of our RP3 preparation, one of the new questions for RP3 that we'll be submitting in September has to do with, do you have a comprehensive physical security policy? And we could not say that. So basically, we're in the process of drafting such a physical security policy to pretty much do what we have in a variety of documents, as well as informal policies, and just make that a little more robust. So I guess, Lori, those were the two that I was thinking about speaking to. And I believe we talked about critical supply chain issues and inventory. We have it on our list to add something under manage risk internal in that respect per Jim's recommendation.
Yes.
That first item under strategic initiative, develop, implement, and formal risk management program. Energy Northwest has a very detailed, deep dive risk management program and process. We might get some ideas from them on that we could use. Not all of it, some of it.
Sure. I have been looking at different organizations and how they go about this, so we're kind of in the process of working through that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, and the final slide here is manage risk external. And again, that's John and Lori.
Okay, I guess Lori took the other one. I'll take this one. There's a little bit of duplication here because risk is risk, but we try to divide it into internal and external risk for obvious reasons. The picture of excellence, we made a minor change, actually a substantial change, but the district consults with outside agencies and subject matter experts to identify and mitigate external risk. We're working with the U.S. Forest Service, DNR on wildfire concerns. We're working with ISCA for cybersecurity concerns as well as PERMs to make sure that we're up to speed and minimize the potential of risk. One of the biggest things we're concerned about is somebody getting access and locking us out of PUD information systems. That's happening on a daily basis all over the country, and utilities are becoming more and more targeted. So we're working on a wide variety of cybersecurity mitigation. Identified big gaps, emergent external risks may not have yet been identified or analyzed. No, we don't know what we don't know. So we have to keep track of industry information as it becomes available. Our IT group on a daily basis is bombarded, not by attacks per se, but information regarding other organizations reporting how they have been attacked. We are not meeting the latest requirements of the insurance underwriter to get the most favorable rate. We also have outdated service area and franchise agreements. I can't really put a finger at us being at fault because we're not the agency that drafts typically the franchise agreements, but we have to hold the county and municipalities' feet to the fire to get their updates to the franchise agreement. Currently, we're operating under previous franchise agreements. Also, we have unplanned budgetary impacts to new regulations, economic uncertainties, and inflationary pressures that are increasing cost of operation and project completion times. We kind of touched on supply chain issues next, critical supply chain issues resulting in significant project cost increase, delays, and inability to perform our mission. Now, that's a gap, and when we get to the initiatives, that's where we... As a matter of fact, take that back. We're going to move, since we have that gap under external risk, and it is an external risk, Jim's earlier suggestion for a mitigation would be to add a strategic initiative number 8 here, because that's the gap which we correctly identified in Jim's suggestion or prior discussions and meetings, suggestions about taking a hard look at inventory needs to go here. So, Sean, did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay, continue to prepare and mitigate risk of major wildfire and national disasters. There's new U.S. Forest Service permitting requirements, new DNR requirements that we have to adhere to. We have to have an operating plan by the end of, about mid-2023, I believe, but it's coming up really quick. Continue to evaluate and prepare for mass adaptation of EVs on the district's electric system. As mentioned in earlier presentations to the board, we are going to see a likely increase of 20%+ electric loads when EVs are fully implemented throughout our county. The state wants to, has implemented cars 2030. And sometime in the next 2 to 3 decades, almost all vehicles will be either EVs or fuel cell or hydrogen operating vehicles, because the internal combustion engine in Washington, as far as registration for new vehicles, will not be permitted. So we have to plan and prepare for that. And as we presented in previous board presentations earlier this year as well as last year, we've outlined what our plans are and what we're going to try to accomplish. Also, this is one that's really relevant, incorporate pandemic lessons learned into the ERRP. We had a pandemic plan prior to COVID, But looking at it, in 2020 hindsight, no, it was not adequate. We had to develop a COVID operating plan and safety plan, and we're going to take every lesson learned from COVID and other potentialities and build it into the emergency response and restoration plan. And also prepare to mitigate and recover from a major breach or ransomware impacting computer systems. This is a big one. You hear of multi-million dollar payouts for organizations to mostly offshore hackers to get their information back. We have to be ready and prepared for that. Also, negotiate with SQM, Forks, Port Angeles, and Clown County to renew and maintain service area and franchise agreements. We are hopefully going to kick off discussions with City of Port Angeles on the service area agreement, as well as the franchise agreements for other areas. Okay, key performance indicators. We did change the AGIS topics to 1 to 2 needs improvement for yellow and 3 or more needs improvement for red. And the driving factor for that is these evaluations are becoming more comprehensive and more challenging. They've added additional categories. Like last time, they had wires down, CSR call response, and they've added a couple more areas. So we thought in fairness that we want to get all green, all satisfactory, yellow 1 to 2 needs improvement. And there's a long list of, I think it's up to 13 categories that they look at. And we usually mitigate or complete those before they leave site, but we like to be all satisfactory going into such an inspection. That inspection is going to occur at the end of this month. They try to do it on 3 or 4 year intervals. Claim events paid or compromised. The change here, we used to do it based on the number of claims, and that's not really representative of risk. I mean, if we have, 10, $50 claims, it's not the same as if we have a $50,000 claim. So we wanted to peg that to dollar amounts paid for things like PUD vehicles, backing over a mailbox or doing something that, driving over a drain line that caused damage, we had to do something about it. Or even an electrical event on our system that we deem as our fault if we have to pay a customer damages. $10,000 or less, green, $10,000 to $20,000, yellow, red, more than $50,000. Any questions on this one?
Yeah, just real quick. I believe interpretation or revision of RCWs allows executive session discussion of cybersecurity. We haven't done that for a long time. Maybe we need to get an update.
Yeah, we could certainly. This is Steve. We could certainly do that. And as far as number 5 goes, we're actually looking at some new software to do more frequent phishing attack. Drills with staff and other training for staff on cybersecurity to mitigate number 5. But yes, we could do an update for the board in an executive session like we did a couple of years ago.
Hey, Steve, it might be a good idea. I mean, when we get the PERMs, we talked to PERMs a little while back and all their new requirements, two-factor authentication that we're looking at when we, have something to present on that, and then probably the next couple months would be a good idea.
Yep, and plus once we get through this RP3 application, like John was talking about earlier, in the previous RP3 application, there were like 5 questions on cybersecurity. Now there are 2.5 pages that I have to go through, so.
It's
a little more extensive.
Yeah, it used to be yes or no, do you do this? And now it's yes or no and provide all your procedures and documentation to substantiate that you're doing it. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
It's a major change this time.
All right. Well, commissioners, that is the conclusion of the presentation that shows all of our updates. So I have a couple pages of notes from your suggestions that will get incorporated into the strategic plan. And then once we get those incorporated, we'll produce a clean copy to post on our website for the public to review. And then in the next meeting or two, we'll go ahead and host a work session before a regular meeting to engage with customers and local governance and receive some of their feedback as well before we bring a final version to you for approval. So any questions on the overall process or anything else that you'd like to add regarding the strategic plan?
Sounds good.
Yep, I think you've got all our questions and comments.
I think it looked really, really good.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. Jeez. Okay, our next item is intervening in petition review for BP 22. Rick, I think you had something on that.
Well, I just thought that it would be something that we should discuss given the email that we got from Ryan on it. So I don't really have a presentation other than just asking whether we agree with Ryan not to submit any comments or just wanted to see where you were on it.
So, I agree with Ryan that we should just stay neutral on it.
Well, the has the Public Power Council discussed this, or do we know?
Yeah, it says in Ryan's email, he said that both PPC and NRU are intervening in the case. And he went on to say, for those reasons, I don't recommend that WAPEG intervene. But because each of the WAPEG utilities was a party to the BP 22 rate case in its own right, each WAPEG member has the right to individually intervene. And so if we elect to intervene as a district, we just need to let him know by the end of the day tomorrow. And basically the gist of the petition was there was an objection to the BP 22 rates in that BPA used the additional secondary revenue it forecasted for the BP 24 rate period compared to the BP 22 in an effort to lower power rates and pay down debt rather than increase its fish and wildlife budget.
Yeah. Well, given that our third of our BPA bill in the past has been fish and wildlife, but I think the Public Power Council and others will probably do this. We don't want to incur costs doing this, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know what the cost would be to have Ryan intervene on our behalf. I could get a quote if you want it, but we'd have to let him know by the end of the day tomorrow. So.
But as I understand it, as an organization, they decided not to intervene, so we would have to.
It would be on our dime.
It'd be on our dime.
Individually, not as a WAPEG collective group.
Yeah.
I believe you're also subject to discovery, too, if you do that. Which is could be a lot of work.
Okay. Rick, you concur with that?
I don't know. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I don't really have a strong opinion on it one way or the other.
Well, the impact could be very large to us and our customers, but we got
our biggest disadvantage, I guess, on this is that we're not members of PPC or NRU. So
yeah, well, good point. That's true.
I mean, we don't know what they're actually going to be doing. So I don't know if that's something Ryan could get for us.
Yeah, we might work at cross purposes if we get involved. Okay, well, let's just see how it evolves. He's saying by the end of today. Is that the timeline we have to?
And we need to respond to him by the end of tomorrow, July 12th, end of the day. And if the interventions themselves are due July 15th, which is, what is that, Friday? Yeah, Friday.
Wow.
It would be a lot of work in a short amount of time. And I don't know if Ryan can handle the load. I didn't ask him that question.
Yeah. Okay, so let's. Am we in agreement on this one, or?
Yes.
Understand, Pat? Okay, good.
Okay.
Our next item is BPA 2028 contract discussion. I don't have anything. Is anybody else?
No, I don't.
I do. During the last meeting, it became very apparent to me that the way that we're defining Tier 1 is 100% different than the way we've done it in the past. Historically, I believe, Tier 1 was defined on the resource side. And my concern is that, contrary to what some people think, Bonneville is providing a very cost-effective product, given where the market is, and there's a lot of new load showing up, or I anticipate that there's going to be a lot of new load showing up. And my concern is that we're going to put Bonneville in a position of having to go out and acquire significant amount of power to meet the new demand. And the way Tier 1 is being defined with respect to people just coming in with what they their load is and then a 5 or 10% headroom, that, like I said, we're going to be putting Bonneville in a position of having to acquire a lot of new power. And I see a lot of red flags about that. So I thought that was, I think, one of the biggest outcomes of the last couple of meetings we've had with WAPAG and talking about the new contract.
Yeah, there was an accusatory piece. Somebody sent me a copy about that public power was imposing rate increases on blockchain and Bitcoin operations, as if that was a bad thing. So anyway, it was kind of funny. Anything else on that topic? Okay, correspondence communication. Sean, do we have any?
I did not today because I knew it was going to be a longer meeting, so nothing today.
Good call. All right, commissioner reports. Jim?
I attended the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, had the Resource Adequacy Advisory Committee meet last week, and I attended that meeting, and so they're laying out their annual plan to get, you know, they do an annual, in case you didn't know, they do an annual resource adequacy study, and to provide, you know, to look at adequacy. So they laid out the process for that, and they also get a pretty good little information dump on the problem with the current way loss of load probability is calculated and displayed, and what kind of erroneous kind of information that can point to. So they're working on improvements on new ways of measuring the reliability of the system, and gave the example of Tacoma and Seattle Light. So anyway, and that process will continue on for a few more months.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Rick, do you have something?
I went to the WAPAG meeting and already shared my concerns about the new contract.
Okay, well, I've been busy elsewhere, so. All right, staff reports. Anything, Sean?
Nothing today.
Board action items, T?
I just
outside
have
of the strategic plan.
Yeah, I just have the update to the plan.
Yeah, just make it universal. Okay, comments from the public. T, can you cue those up? T, I can hear you talking outside, but I can't hear you on my earphones.
I'll take it, Will. If anybody from the public would like to share a comment at this time, please state your name. Hearing none.
Okay, good. All right, no executive session, so if there's no other business to come before the commission, we will adjourn. Thank you to everyone.
Thanks, commissioners. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks.
My battery died.
Not possible.